97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
Well, Supreme Court's allowing Trump to fire these 1,300 people who work for the Department of Education. You have to ask yourself, as long as they've been around, what have they actually done for anybody? I mean, what have they done for grades? What have they done for anybody except push an agenda that a lot of parents don't want to see? Whatever happened to reading, writing, arithmetic, all that kind of stuff, instead of all the children having to learn all the things that they shouldn't be taught by teachers, you know, like sex stuff and all these other kinds of things. And we know that they haven't really done much for us. Jean Evans is here. She's the state lead for the American Federation for Children. Wanted to chat with her about this good news for the Department of Education. How are you? Welcome to the Mark Reardon Show.
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
This is good news. I guess all this dead weight is going to be gone now. And ultimately, Trump's plan is to get rid of the Department of Education. I know we can't just do that unilaterally, but what do they do for us? Can you remind me what they do? What's their purpose?
Well, they do a couple of things. You know, they were created by Jimmy Carter. This is probably a newer one of the cabinet positions, and the Constitution doesn't even talk about education. So it really is something that should be at the states. But they have taken over a lot of K-12 as well as university stuff. So they handle some of the Pell Grant stuff, some of the student loan things on the higher ed, and then some important things that they do for the K-12 have to do with IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Act, which was around before the department was created and will be enforced by a different, you know, like civil rights group or something like that. It is not going to, these are laws that have to be followed. They would just be administered by a different branch or a different agency, I should say.
Well, that's what Trump's talking about, apparently, right? It's kind of just having other agencies pick up the slack with student loans and all of that. It sounds like it could be done.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to look at the accomplishments, they really haven't done anything. I mean, so the best things that they've done were pieces that were already in place that they kind of took over because they really didn't have anything to do. Like I said, you know, Carter just created this out of thin air. But moving this back to the states, which is, you know, similar to what he's done with the ECCA, the Child Credit for Education, which will be handled by the states. It's in the federal tax code, but it's going to be administered by states. And they're really emphasizing more local control, specifically parents. But the administration of funding will come through states, and the federal government is going to get out of it. And if you talk to superintendents and even school board leaders, a lot of them will tell you that complying with all these crazy federal guidelines is almost as expensive, if not more so, than the funds that they receive. So it's really not going to be this financial disaster that some folks might have you to believe. It's just going to be a little bit different, but it's also going to be way more local. And I really believe, and I think most of the listeners would agree, that somebody in Washington doesn't know near as much about educating the children of St. Louis or rural Missouri or Montana or wherever. That's, you know, somebody in D.C. just doesn't, they don't know what it's like here. It's very different. They're very far away. And also just the levels of bureaucracy that just seem to get in the way with the actual education, which I think you mentioned in the intro.
Absolutely. Jean Evans is with us. She's a state lead for the American Federation for Children. I'm Heidi Harris in for Mark Reardon. I saw a couple of months back that Pete Hegseth was trying to get the military to look into the policies about homeschooling. I had honestly never thought about that before. The idea, the importance of being able to homeschool in various localities, because obviously the laws are different. We might move and kids are moved around enough and shuffled around enough. How about the consistency of being homeschooled? Do you know anything about what's happening with that? Because that's not like a great idea to me.
That is a great idea. I don't know what they're doing at the federal level, but I will tell you that here in Missouri, our military families are big supporters of virtual education and school choice. And a lot of them, you know, if they're moving from state to state or location, having the ability to have that consistent learning, like from a virtual program, is super helpful. But in some states, it's really hard to homeschool. I mean, we have a lot of freedom in Missouri, but in other states, you've got to jump through a lot of hoops, and they make it almost impossible to educate your own child, which is just seems crazy to me. I mean, we are the first educators, right, of our children. So I do believe that would be a great policy for our military people, and we've definitely adopted that here in Missouri.
Yeah, I would love to see that happen on a national level, international right. level, actually, because when people are, you know, doing a service all over the world, and they do need that consistency of the same kind of teaching and not having to be thrown in different schools every 2 years. Very difficult for kids. I had never even thought about it until I saw that he had looked into it. So I don't know what's going to happen, but that would be great to see. I like that idea a lot. So talk to me about what else can be done. I mean, I know Trump's very concerned about education. Obviously, he doesn't like the bureaucracy of the Department of Education. Who does? Right. They're not getting their jobs done. What else needs to be done?
Well, we need more school choice in all of the states, blue states, red states, any states, because when people can vote with their feet by leaving a school that's not educating their children or is teaching an ideology that's different than their own, it forces the schools by competition to get better and be more responsive to parents. Unfortunately, for so many parents, they don't have the ability to move. And even if they could move, sometimes the school in the closest district is not that much better. But if they have school choice, like they do, say, for example, in Florida, about half the students take advantage of some sort of school choice program. And what they have found is that even the public schools have gotten better. Those students are doing better than they were before school choice because the public schools have gotten better at responding to the needs of students and parents. So more school choice drives better results. And also, it just makes sense. Parents should be able to decide where to send their kids. It shouldn't be, you know, assigned by zip code. I mean, they don't tell us where we can grocery shop or what hospital, or even universities. You know, we get Pell Grants. We can take them to any university. But for whatever reason, they think, you can only go to the school that we assign you to because it's, quote unquote, federal or state money. That doesn't make sense in anything else we do. It shouldn't be like that in schools. And school choice is really the answer for a lot of these other problems.
No question. We're speaking with Jean Evans. She is a state lead for the American Federation for Children. I'm Heidi Harrison from Mark Reardon. You know what's interesting? I've heard a lot of people say, well, yeah, but I can't take my kid to a private school in, you know, blah, blah, blah neighborhood. But here's the thing. If every parent, depending on the state, a lot of states have discussed this, where they would give the parents back the amount of money that they spend in taxes right. to educate their child, right? So you've got that voucher. And if all of a sudden parents in, let's say, a rural area, all of a sudden had vouchers, well, guess what would happen? Little schools would spring up to take that money and educate those kids there. So you wouldn't have to be driving 50 miles, right?
That's exactly right. And that's actually what's happened in Florida. These schools have sprung up in rural areas, micro schools that start out small, but grow. And even if they don't get too big, they are addressing the needs for those particular kids. And, you know, this one size fits all system that we have just really doesn't work. But you're right. When you have the ability to take that money with you to a school that you choose to support and choose to send your student to, these schools, that's a response to the demand, right? The money is there.
That's right.
So the parents can, but also the schools see the writing on the wall and say, hey, you know what? We need to be more responsive because we no longer have a captive audience. We have to do better. We have to deliver better to students, and we have to be more responsive to parents. Because right now, a lot of parents feel like they can't get anywhere when they have a problem or if their student's not learning. They're just kind of stuck. And when you have more options, they're forced to be more responsive. It's really incredible. I mean, there are other states where this is happening, but Florida's been doing it the longest, and that's why their education down there continues to get better. I mean, better and better every year, the performance across the board in private schools and in public schools.
Yeah. You know what's so sad to me? Speaking of what, you know, the schools having to be better, having to be more responsive because they're going to have to be, they want the butts in the seats. They're going to have to do better, right? The idea that we even had to go to court to prevent kids from being exposed to LGBT books when they're 8 years old. I mean, can you even imagine that had to even go to court? I mean, you can't buy cigarettes till you're 18. You can't
right.
get certain video games till you're 18. What, are you kidding me? And this was even an issue that parents should have the right to not have to put their kid in there? I mean, really?
Well, wow. Again, like if the parents had the ability to say, you know what, this isn't the right fit for us, we're going to go to this other school because they don't have that there, those problems would resolve themselves. And I feel like legislators across the country are trying to push back on things that are happening in schools, but they're late and they're not as responsive. And it takes years sometimes for this litigation to go through. In the meantime, something else pops up that you don't really want in your schools. But if people could leave, you know, like if you go to a grocery store and you don't like what they're selling, you go to a different one, or you don't like the way they treat you. or it's not the right fit, right? Like some people like Whole Foods, some people like Aldi. They should be able to go to whichever one that they like. So that it should be the same with, it's even more important with education, honestly. And, you know, this, we have a whole, you know, this generation that who missed a lot of learning because of COVID, and that was forced upon us. And a lot of people started opting for private schools because they wanted, their kids didn't learn well online. Some kids do, many kids don't. But a lot of private schools really thrived during that time because so many parents were like, my student, my child is not learning in front of a screen. Or maybe I don't want my kid in front of a screen 8 hours a day. I mean, that's the other thing, too. I mean, it works for some, but not for all.
Well, that's true. And also, people, I think people also found out what kind of garbage was being taught their kids, too. If they were being taught anything, a lot of parents had no idea of some of the things that were being taught. So that was eye-opening for them during COVID.
Yeah, it was one of the probably one of the good things that came out of all this is more parents became aware of what was happening or not happening in schools and how much time was being spent on things that really were not about learning to read, write, history, those sort of basic things that we expect of schools. So I think it was a real eye opener. And from that perspective, I'm grateful.
Yeah, but you know what? The bottom line is, who owns your children? Some of these people, you hear what they say. They feel like they own your child. I'm sorry, you don't own my child, but that's the way some of them, not all of them, but some of them actually think.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I have to say, you know, I know you know teachers. I know most of the teachers I know really work hard. They feel like it's a calling.
Yes.
And I don't think that these national unions really represent the teachers that I know, right? And I feel like they've been misrepresented for a long time. And I'm not sure how to fix that. But I do know that the school choice, teachers end up making more money when they're school choice. Those schools attract better teachers. They compete for teachers. So that creates a better environment for them as well. And we do have a teacher shortage here in Missouri. So we need to create an environment that's more attractive for them to work and thrive, to be in schools where they feel like, you know, they are teaching things they want to teach and that they can be responsive without having, you know, someone put their thumb on them about, no, don't talk to the parents, we'll do it for you or whatever it is. So I really feel like school choice is good for, it's good for teachers too. And we've seen polling that shows that 3 out of 4 teachers actually support school choice vouchers, ESAs, those sort of things. So the, I mean, these people know. I mean, they're in schools every day, and they support it. So I think that we just got to move in that direction.
Yeah, you know, teachers have a choice as to where they work, don't they?
Well, and a lot of them can take their teachers. So if they teach them in a district that they don't live in, they can take their kids to that school. So they can practice sort of an open enrollment, but nobody else can, which isn't really fair. You know, like, well, if they can do it, if it's so great, why can't everybody else do it?
Right. Just want to do what you're doing. That's the truth. Jean Evans, thanks for being on the Mark Reardon Show. She's a state lead for the American Federation for Children. Thank you for looking out for the rights of the kids because they don't vote. And, you know, we really have to watch out for them, make sure they have the right education going forward.
Well, thank you.